You are listening to
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Worldwide Engineering.
Hello, Worldwide Engineers. Welcome to this podcast. My name is Leon, founder and CEO of Worldwide Engineering. Before we get into the podcast, I wanted to take a second to thank you for being here today, for finding time in your busy schedule to listen to this podcast, to learn something new and acquire new information. My guest today is called Zachary Lefebvre. Zach is the CEO of ChargeLab, which is a software company that specializes in managing the charging infrastructure of electric vehicles. In today's podcast, Zach and I got to dive deep into what are some of the major infrastructure challenges the EV industry is going to be facing in the coming decade, and what can we do as engineers to solve those problems and create opportunities out of those challenges. This was honestly a really good conversation I had with Zachary. You know, it's especially relevant in today's world where the EV industry is reaching a point where it's growing exponentially. And now is the good time for us as engineers and aspiring entrepreneurs to get into this market or just to understand the market so that we'll be able to quickly adapt with it. With that said, people, let's get into the podcast. I'll be seeing you on the other side. Well, Zach, it's a pleasure having you here today. We've been trying to plan that for a while, and I'm happy we're making this happen. So, Zach, for the people who haven't heard about you before, can you give us a brief introduction of what do you do and what does ChargeLab do exactly?
Sure. I'm the CEO of ChargeLab. We like to say that we're the operating system for electric vehicle charging. And there's an exponential growth in electric vehicles right now, which means a lot of people need charging ports installed on the street side, in their office building, in their condo building, at home. And we built a layer of software that can run on almost any EV charger and makes the EV charger a lot smarter. So I'd love to talk more about that, but we're the operating system for EV charging.
That's super interesting, and that's definitely something I want to dive into later. But before that, I'm just really curious about your journey going from, you know, a student to becoming the CEO of ChargeLab today. What did your journey look like? Were you always into entrepreneurship, I'm going to say? Did you always have an inclination towards technology and innovation? What happened?
Yeah, I grew up surrounded by technology. Both of my parents worked at a company called Bell Northern Research, which became Nortel, which at one point was the largest telecommunications company in the world, based out of Ottawa, Canada. And then like other great Canadian companies like BlackBerry, they had their decline. So I grew up in the 90s in Ottawa, kind of surrounded by Nortel, BlackBerry, and all of the kind of tech that was going on. Then I actually briefly lived overseas in Beijing, which was another great experience to experience kind of firsthand what air pollution and smog looks like. In the United States and Canada, you can't always see air pollution, but in China, you can literally see the air pollution in front of your eyes. And then I came back to Montreal, actually, which is where you are. And I studied at McGill University. And it was there that I really started getting involved in entrepreneurship. I started my first couple of businesses. And throughout university, I was studying software engineering and also finance. And I always wanted to start a technology company, a software company. But my first few businesses were kind of more traditional, just student-run businesses. And it was a couple years after I had graduated McGill that the opportunity to build a company in the electric vehicle charging space came up. And obviously, I jumped on it right away.
So what was your thought process deciding to develop a software company for EVs?
Yeah, I think it was, it was looking for a problem that I could solve. But I think the other thing that I get more and more conviction about as an entrepreneur as time goes on is just timing, right? Timing is so important. And I know actually one thing you wanted to talk about, so I'll bring it up ahead of time, is I did this program in Mountain View, California at NASA called Singularity University. And one of the founders of Singularity University is Ray Kurzweil. And Ray Kurzweil was working on artificial intelligence in the 1970s. And the crazy thing is, you know, as a new generation of people in engineering technology, we think of AI as this phenomenon of the last 10 years. But the idea of neural networks, essentially the core ideas of how we do AI, were invented in the 1970s.
That's true.
So why did we not have super intelligent AI, you know, by the year 1999? And the reason is because there wasn't computing power. So in order to do natural language processing or recognize a cat from a dog, you need, I think, 18 or 19 layers of neural nets. So you have a neural network that goes down a number of layers. And at the time in the 1970s, the computers were only strong enough to build a single layer neural network. So you basically couldn't teach a computer anything. And so while the ideas for artificial intelligence were there, you didn't have the technology to execute it. The same thing goes for electric vehicles. You know, the first electric vehicles were built in the 90s. Actually, the first electric vehicles were built in the 1890s. Before gasoline vehicles, I'm sure you've told your viewers this story, and other people have told your viewers this story before, or your listeners rather. But it was really figuring out when were batteries going to get cheap enough? When was this technology going to become sophisticated enough? So I was a couple years out of university, out of McGill, and I was looking at like what industry is just going to grow exponentially. And there were really positive trends for electrification. And it's really tricky to spot these trends at the beginning, because what was really positive for me is that EV sales were doubling almost every year. But what's tricky is their market share went from 0.01% to 0.02%, then 0.02% to 0.04%. And when I got into the industry, I was super excited because it had just gone from 0.04% to 0.1%. It was betting on the industry, but you really have to look at the trend rather than the absolute numbers. Because when I started, I think there were tens of thousands of electric vehicles on the roads in North America. And now we're over a million and quickly on our way to 2 million, 5 million, 10 million.
That's amazing. So how does ChargeLab help electric vehicles with its charging? Because you're mainly a software company. And the first thing that came to my mind when I saw that, I was like, whoa, that's interesting. But how does software play a role in car charging, which is something I really want to dive into?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I love talking about it. We have to go back to kind of first principles, which is how are you going to refuel your vehicle? Right? The reason we have gas stations is because petrol is really hard to store and transport. You know, you can't keep petrol at your house because it's toxic, it's expensive to move around. And so you don't have a tank of gas in your house that you just put into your car. My dad did. He always had a backup, container in the garage so he could fill up his car. But most people don't have that. The difference with electric vehicles is you can connect anywhere to the grid. You can plug your electric car into the same outlet you plug your iPhone into. And you can actually, every EV comes with a charger that plugs into a 120 volt outlet. The problem is it'll take, you know, a couple of days to fully charge your battery. And so that's why we go about installing more sophisticated charging infrastructure. But the problem that comes up is like, okay, I can charge my car anywhere. I can charge it in my condo. I can charge it at my office building. But that doesn't mean that the building was designed for electric vehicles. Because again, as you know, when we engineer a building, we say, okay, you know, how many floors is this building going to be? How much heating and cooling does it need? How much electricity does it need? And we build that building for exactly what it needs, with maybe an extra 20% margin in case they decide to add, extra like manufacturing facilities or equipment down the road. So almost every building in the world has a little bit of extra electrical capacity, but not enough to charge 20, 30, 40, 50 electric vehicles. What's really unique about what we can do is help buildings install as many EV chargers as they want. And then if only two or three or four people are plugged in, we give them full power to their electric vehicles. But as 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 people plug in, our software will intelligently load balance. And what this means is that everybody can plug in an office building or condo or along the road. It just means that as kind of demand goes up, we have to kind of adjust and decrease the charging rate. And then there's actually quite a complicated software layer here, because if you're charging at 10 kilowatts versus 5 kilowatts, we should be billing you a different rate. And maybe you're in a rush to get out the door, so you want to keep charging at 10 kilowatts, but the guy next to you is in no rush at all, so he's willing to pay less to charge at a slower rate. And so our software does all of these things. And then on top of that, we act as kind of a point of sale. So we bill the EV drivers on behalf of the buildings. And you know, at this point, we've deployed hundreds of EV chargers all across North America. And so you might have somebody pull up to a hotel in Florida and want to charge their car. And so we provide the interface for them to interact with that charger, pay for that charger. You might live in a condo building in Toronto, and we provide the interface for that. Or you might go to a casino in California, and we'll provide the point of sale interface there. And these are all examples of projects that, you know, we've done as ChargeLab.
That's amazing. So then do you connect? Does your EV charger connect to the local grid, so to the building grid, or does it connect to the city grid?
Yeah. So generally speaking, the EV chargers we install are running off the existing electrical capacity. As we get to more super fast chargers along the roads and along highways, often, you know, we'll bring in a dedicated grid connection for those super fast chargers. But the reality is that there's limited electrical capacity in cities too. This problem I described where, okay, maybe you can only put in, you know, 10 or 20 EV chargers in a building, but you want to put in 20 or 40. This also applies to a whole city, where you're only going to have a certain electric capacity in a city. And we know this from less developed countries where you'll have brownouts, right? And even, you know, 30, 40 years ago in the US and Canada, we used to have brownouts in some city in the summer when there was too much AC running. And so this is kind of this problem that's been gone now, certainly in the US and Canada for decades, actually threatens to return if everybody plugs in their car in downtown Montreal at the same time.
That's true. You know, one thing I absolutely love about your business model is the scalability of it. You know, you're in an industry that's growing exponentially. And the great thing about having a software, developing a software, is that you can literally scale your software operations as the industry scales. So it wouldn't change the software for you if you had 1,000 cars that were operating on that software, or if you had 1,000,000 cars on that software. So then this brings to the question, What are some of the things you're doing or you're in the process of rolling out in terms of features or hardware, software to adapt to this exponentially growing industry?
Yeah. So first of all, you're right that the industry is growing exponentially, and it's actually hard to wrap your head around how fast things like this grow. Today, there's about 500,000 public EV chargers everywhere in the world, in China, in Europe, in Canada, in the US, and in South America. And in total, including everybody's home EV charger, there's about 7 million EV chargers around the world. In the next 10 years, this number is going to increase to somewhere between 150 and 250 million, and somewhere around 25 million public charging ports. So even on the public side, we're talking about 500,000 today going to 25 million in the next 10 years. And this is what exponential growth really is all of the EV chargers installed in the past 10 years, we're going to install more EV chargers in the past 10 years than we did in the past 10 years in the next 12 to 18 months. And then in the next 12 to 18 months, we're going to install more than all of that combined. So as a business, it's a great opportunity. I think the biggest risk is, like, we're a small startup. We're about 20 people. How do we kind of scale up our technology to serve the market? And that's why we've taken this approach of, rather than trying to build our own hardware, we build a very specific software layer that runs on top of other hardware. And we work with other great engineering companies like ABB and like Siemens. And, you know, so our plan to scale up is really to work with these partners who have huge manufacturing capabilities, who can produce millions of devices per year. Because even if we moved as fast as we could, I could not manufacture a million EV chargers, but I can build the software that will, you know, that will connect a million chargers. I can also talk a little bit about, you know, kind of innovating on the software and where we're going with that. If that.
That would be interesting, actually. I'd love that.
I like to say we're the Android of EV charging. And that's because we build this software layer that runs on top of all the different hardware devices. And just like Android, in the early days, it was not as smooth as iOS, right? Because Apple built the hardware, software, they fully integrated everything. Just like in our industry, Tesla fully integrates everything. You know, our software doesn't manage Tesla chargers, but that's okay because the market's big enough and Tesla vehicles can still use our chargers, even if they're not the proprietary Tesla type of charger. So one big thing for us is working on that communication between the hardware and the software. We can connect over 40 different models of EV chargers today, but we want to do more in terms of making that connection very stable. So, you know, that's backend stuff. You know, the true firmware engineers among your listeners will really appreciate this, but yeah. Everyone else will be like, oh, okay, hardware, software, you guys can figure that out. It sounds complicated. Some of the kind of fun front-end things we're doing is the experience for charging an EV, unfortunately, today is very inconsistent. Sometimes it's very good, but most of the times it's very bad. So if you drive a Tesla, you just pull up to a supercharger, you plug in your car, and you don't use a credit card, you don't use an app, you don't use an RFID card. Tesla recognizes the vehicle through the charging port. And like, let's say it's, you know, Leon's Tesla Model X. It says, oh, this is Leon's Tesla. We have his credit card. We're going to bill him automatically. But because everybody else is not vertically integrated, if you have a BMW or a Nissan or a Hyundai, and you go to a public charger, you're going to probably have to download an app, put your credit card into the app, find the charger. Okay, the app crashes. I'm going to reset the app, start the session. Okay, it doesn't work. I'm going to call the 1-800 number. So, you know, people from outside the industry don't know that there's this huge problem with kind of the interface and reliability. So a big focus for us is like, how do we bring that Tesla experience to everyone else? And so we're starting to work with car OEMs and EV charger manufacturers to realize this reality where driving an EV really feels like the future. You just pull up, you plug in, and you get a text message saying, hey, we're charging you, you know, on St. Catherine Street. You'll be done in 45 minutes and we'll bill you, $5.
You know, I'm glad you actually mentioned that, you know, this inconsistency in standards in EV vehicles. And it actually reminds me of what we're experiencing right now in the phone industry. You know, iPhone has a specific charger that you can't use with an Android. And it's like each company has their own standards. And of course, it's a business move. But then how is this inconsistency in standards for charging? How is that affecting the EV industry, for example?
That's an interesting question. I deal with this every day, so I just face it as a reality, right? But I think it's always good to think outside the box and think how can you change that? I mean, the beautiful thing about standards is it gets people aligned. And so at Charge Lab, we're actually a member of the Open Charge Alliance, which defines a protocol for communication between EV chargers and cloud platforms like ours. And then we're also involved with protocols between the car and the EV charger. And what's really beautiful about these open protocols is now all of the EV charger manufacturers can build firmware that will connect to our cloud, or they can send the same charger to India and the Charge Lab of India, because we're not in that market yet. Hopefully we will be one day. But for now, a competitor in India can connect the same hardware. And this lets the market move a lot faster, because imagine if ABB had to build custom firmware for US, Canada, Germany, India, China. They would release less products. Their products would release slower. So I think standardization is really imperative to moving any industry forward. And like, you know, telecom is another great example. Like you've heard things like GSM, CDMA, and this is what we went through in the 90s and 2000s of, you know, how do we make it so that I can take my, you know, my T-Mobile phone and roam on Verizon, or I can take my Bell phone and roam on Rogers. And once that roaming happens, things get cheaper for consumers. There's more innovation because people can't compete on, you know, the closed network. They have to compete on better features and better prices. And it really helps accelerate the industry. So I think that open standards are really important. And luckily, so your listeners know, Tesla's the only vehicle that has their own proprietary plug type. So really is like iOS and Android. Everybody else uses the USB-C of EV charging, and that's already been standardized. So we've made a ton of progress, but you know, continuing to push on that front would be great for the industry.
How will the greater adoption of electric cars impact other industries? And something I thought about automatically is, for example, right now what we're seeing is the exponential improvement in battery technology. So then my thought is this improvement in battery technology for cars, is this going to trickle down to your phone, for example, where all of a sudden the battery in your phone is going to become much better and you can run your phone for an entire week? Is your TV going to become better? Is it going to trickle down to other industries? What do you think about that?
I think the trickle down idea is great. I think if we look at phones again, you know, the scaling up of smartphones has meant touch screens, cellular radios, you know, microphones, cameras, all of this stuff has gotten super small and super cheap. So now what you'll notice is, you know, you go to the grocery store and you check out your groceries on a touch screen, and you go to the peak parking meter and there's a touch screen, you know, and you get a watch and there's a touch screen. And all of this has been a trickle down effect of smartphones, you know, smartphone supply chain, because they all use the same background components, even if it's a different size screen, like a lot of the kind of background components can be the same. So it's a great question. You know, if we're going to go from, you know, selling thousands of electric vehicles to selling millions of electric vehicles, what's the trickle down effect going to be? You know, I think battery chemistry and battery technology will continue to improve. Though keep in mind, we've already made several billion smartphones. So there, you know, we're probably getting to the limit of how we can optimize batteries on, you know, on smartphones. But certainly electric vehicles could impact that. I think that the battery conversation is also really interesting. Probably the biggest, for me, the biggest knock-on effect of electric vehicles is the concept of something we call vehicle-to-grid technology. So do you know about vehicle-to-grid?
Not very familiar.
Okay. So, you know, we talk about renewable energy and switching all of the energy to solar and wind. But the biggest problem that everybody says is we need storage, because the sun's shining through the day. People are using energy at night. So we need batteries to kind of offset that gap. And the problem is, you know, batteries are expensive. They're getting cheaper. But even at today's prices, it would cost utilities billions and billions and billions of dollars to buy enough batteries to power the grid when the sun isn't shining, even if we had all the solar panels in the world. What was going to happen is consumers are actually going to spend billions of dollars collectively buying electric vehicles, which are giant battery packs. So if you have a 60 kilowatt hour battery in every home in the world, and you can pull energy from that battery pack and power your house, you can create this really intricate system where you sell energy back to the grid when most cost-effective to do that. You pull energy from the grid to charge your car when it's super cheap. And so electric vehicles, you know, at the baseline are going to transform how we move around, but they could actually transform how we use energy. And ultimately, energy powers everything, you know, entertainment, manufacturing, you know, the internet infrastructure at the end of the street that now hosts your favorite Netflix movie just down the block so you can download it faster. And so the world is becoming this integrated network of smart devices And, you know, this is smart grid, but it's also just IoT and smart technology. But I think that, you know, in terms of like your audience, in terms of people who are looking at getting involved in starting their own company or coming up with a really innovative idea, I think one of the best places to look at is at adjacent kind of spaces. So my favorite example of this is always Uber. Because, you know, there might be one narrative where the founders of Uber were these kind of brilliant entrepreneurs and they came up with the idea for Uber. But the reality is within 12 months of smartphones having good enough cellular internet and GPS capability and lots of people having smartphones and lots of people having cars, within 12 months, people said, oh, hey, you know, you can order a ride from your smartphone. We can tell where the car is because the car also has a smartphone. And then we can connect that. So within 12 months of that happening, there were 100 companies doing what Uber's trying to do. And Uber happened to be the winner. They executed the best. So that's the second part of entrepreneurship is execution. So it's really fascinating to me. And you see kind of these trends.
Can I jump here? I love the idea of going into adjacent markets. So then how would you do that in the EV industry specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I think vehicle to grid is one, right? Right now we're an EV charging service provider, but we could be a grid provider. We could either, you know, turn down EV chargers when it's too expensive, or we could pull energy back from the EVs to put into the grid. The technology doesn't quite exist for that yet, but it's, you know, a concept for the next 5 years. But I think then you just have to ask, like, how are EVs going to be used, right? They're going to be used for Uber Eats. They're going to be used for last mile delivery. You know, they're going to be used in crisis response in California when there's wildfires, when you can't go to a petrol station or it's dangerous to go to a petrol station. Maybe you can still move around more safely in an electric vehicle. So I think finding adjacent businesses is super interesting.
You know, a big topic in the EV industry, and that's something I personally see a lot, you know, every time I make a post about electric vehicles, you know, you always have those constructive arguments, you know, really good argument that create a debate where they say that electric vehicles might look green, they might seem green, they don't necessarily emit any CO2. But what happens when you charge? Where does the electricity, how clean is the electricity that powers that car if it's dirty electricity that's generated from some coal power plant up north? How does that really make the car green? So then, in your opinion, what do you tell to those people? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think this is a great idea to think about it. And it shows you how everything is interconnected, right? And this is kind of like a big theme, I think, a macro trend in technology. You know, luckily in Canada, electricity grid is quite clean, apart from Saskatchewan, Alberta, maybe Manitoba. So even in Canada, there's problems. But in the U.S., there's a lot of coal power, and then especially when you go to the growing markets like India, you know, China's invested a lot of clean energy. So I mean, part of the problem is obviously investing in clean energy. You know, we need to get to renewables. And maybe electric vehicles can help with the energy storage and vehicle to grid. But I think the other thing is, you know, this is a great, you know, engineering challenge for your listeners, right? For thinking about this from first principles. And the thing to remember is electric vehicles are very efficient and gasoline vehicles are very inefficient. And so in the case of a vehicle, what is efficiency? Well, it's the amount of power that is converted or the amount of energy that's converted into forward momentum. So in a gasoline vehicle, you burn fossil fuels because it has a lot of energy. You know, gasoline and petrol is very energy dense. And you burn that and you create forward momentum. But how efficient do you think a gasoline vehicle is? If you took all the joules that are packed into that petrol, how much gets, and you can calculate kinetic energy, right? It's a two-ton car moving at, you know, this speed. How efficient do you think that conversion process is?
Are you actually asking me? If I remember correctly, in one of my classes, one of my TAs was giving the example how cars are engine cars, car engines are around 70% And for the context of this, he was saying how anyone, because the industry has become, has had 100 years of evolution, anyone that is capable, any engineer that is capable of improving a car's efficiency by 0.1% automatically is a millionaire, because those small increments. But is it 70 actually?
Yeah, so I mean, he made a great point that I'd love to talk about, that 1%. Actually, gasoline vehicles are only about 20 to 35% efficient.
No way.
Yeah. And you can know, you can tell this, like as an engineer, you go put your hand on the hood of a car that's been running for an hour, right? It's very hot. You don't want to put your hand on the hood, right? And that's energy, right? That's heat that's escaping. And cars have a muffler because they make so much noise that you have to kind of calm them down, right? And so...
And the vibration.
Right, vibration. Now let's look at an electric vehicle. They don't get hot. You can touch them pretty much at any time as long as you don't touch the electrical conduit and get shocked. They don't get hot. Electric cars actually have a space heater in them because there's nowhere else to get heat. So like that heats the cabin so people can stay warm. In a gasoline vehicle, you just pull heat from the engine and put it into the cabin. What's the most famous thing about electric vehicles? They don't make any noise, right? Yeah. And again, people say they need to have a sound emitter so we can know they're coming. With a gasoline vehicle, we can see where the energy is going, right? It's going to forward momentum, but it's also going to heat. It's also going to noise. It's also going to vibrations. With electric vehicles, almost all of the energy, and I think it's around 80%, is going towards forward momentum. And what that means is, you know, even if you're powering an electric car with dirty energy, you know, people don't want to lose money on their coal power plant. They want to make money. They make these plants very efficient, much more than 30% efficient. So you're actually generating energy in a quite efficient way and then putting it into a quite efficient vehicle. And you're going to lose stuff on transmission, stuff like that. But I think this is just to illustrate that it's not a one-to-one like, oh, well, your power is dirty, so you should just drive a gasoline vehicle. It's like, no. And I think the other really fascinating thing that you said is if you can make a gasoline engine 1% more efficient, you're going to be a millionaire. And that's absolutely correct. And gasoline engines are these really fine-tuned machines. But, you know, what if you can make it 50% more efficient, which is exactly what electric vehicles did? And I think this is why, as an engineer, I think going back to first principles and saying, like, okay, rather than trying to improve this by 10%, like, if we had to make a car 10x more efficient, what would we do? Well, you just can't do it with a gasoline car. Like, people have been working on this for 150 years. Right. And so looking at electric vehicles are fascinating. And, you know, a really interesting stat, I think, is a Honda Civic has about 2,400 moving parts. And a Tesla has less than 30. So yeah, I mean, I think that the dirty grid is certainly a problem, but these things are much more complex. And this is what we need engineers to be working on and thinking on about. And that's why I love your podcast.
That's it, man. At this point, it's an engineering problem and it's solvable. You know, one last thing I want to talk about before we move on to the questions that we actually got, some questions we got from Instagram, is something that I actually saw on your website, which I found really interesting. You know, one, it's something traditional we have in society is that petrol stations are usually, you know, on highways. They're kind of secluded. No one wants to have a petrol station in front of your house. They smell sometimes. They're dangerous. You know, but what we're seeing with electric charging stations is that we're actually starting to put electric charging stations in the middle of urban areas, so in the middle of downtown Montreal, in hotspots, you know, at the parking lot of a mall. All those things. And something interesting that was mentioned on your website is that electric vehicle drivers, they shop and they spend money where they charge their cars. So with this logic, how is this going to reshape the way we design cities and we design cars? If all of a sudden we start having millions of electric cars in the next 100 years, you know, petrol is going to be out. It's going to be like dinosaurs. When we have millions of cars, where are we going to be able to have all those charging stations? How are we going to reshape? How is this going to reshape cities?
Yeah, I mean, generally, I think it's going to make everybody's life better. I drive an electric car, and so I haven't been to a gas station in 4 years, and that's because I just charge in my garage, or I charge when I'm at the grocery store, or I charge when I'm at an office building. And so I think it's going to make people's lives better. I think it's an opportunity for businesses, especially commoditized businesses, right? Your one office building competing against another office building, but the CEO of the company who's going to sign a lease with you looks in the basement and he sees charging stations. Okay, he's going to pick that office building and move his company with 80 people, 100 people, 500 people into your building. So for commercial real estate, it's a huge opportunity. Same for grocery stores, for movie theaters, like one grocery store between another, there's not a big differentiation, but you can put some EV chargers. You can start attracting people and driving your business there. And I think that not as popular of a view today, but a view that I really have is that, we should use more energy and we should use more resources, because using energy increases the quality of life. You can do more learning, you can do more manufacturing, you can do more, you can entertain yourself better. So I think using energy is great. It just has to be clean energy and you have to not be having a harmful impact on the environment. And so I think that, people think about transportation kind of sparingly, like on the far spectrum of people who are environmentally conscious, they say, I don't really need to like drive to go to this place because, I'm going to emit all this, this CO2 along the way. With electric vehicles, you don't have to worry about that. And I'm not necessarily saying more people need to drive. I think cities will get, there'll be less vehicles and people will use public transportation but public transportation is going electric too, right? This is a mega trend. This is not just about Teslas. This is about buses. This is about, trains and every kind of form of transportation. I think people's lives will get better. I think we can be less sparing about energy because good things happen when humans, use energy. And so we've done this whole efficiency exercise because of carbon, but if we're using clean energy, we should just use more of it and build, better technology, improve people's lives, and make the world a more interesting place.
To jump on there, I love that analogy about good things happen when we consume energy. And this actually reminds me of your background, which is full of plants. When you think about it, what do plants thrive on? Energy, solar energy. And what would happen with the lack of energy? They would die. And it's the same with humans.
Yeah, in everything we want to do, if you want to have, super intelligent AI, if you want to have, more movies available on Netflix, if you want to have super real VR with your family that lives on the other side of the world with zero latency. So you can, you can be in Russia tomorrow and it'll feel like real time. All of this takes technology and energy. And so I'm not disagreeing with the energy efficiency movement. That was the right decision given that energy usage has been very carbon intensive. But if we can get to clean energy, I think the other way to think is on a super long period. In 1,000 years, are humans going to be using more or less energy? Well, let's look back 1,000 years. Let's look in the year 1020. What kind of energy? Some people burned a little bit of wood in a stove, did a little bit of cooking, they were inhaling the smoke from that stove and living 30 or 40 years.
I'm sure you've heard of the Kardashev scale.
For the type 1, type 2
civilizations. And what defines a type 2 compared to a type 3 civilization? It's the amount of energy they produce.
Yeah, that's really the measurement of human advancement. Like, we can talk about a whole bunch of things, but it all tracks back to energy usage.
You're right. This is awesome. Well, listen, to close things off, I have a few questions that were sent to me from Instagram. And we can go through those questions, maybe rapid fire. I have about 5 questions here. And there were a lot more questions, but I feel they were kind of answered during this conversation. So the first two questions are actually from Zach Gold. The first question is, what is the most complex part of EV charging?
So the most complex part of EV charging, maybe I'll answer the part that we deal with, which is the power management, right? You're going to put thousands of EV chargers in buildings that maybe only have enough electric capacity for hundreds. And so the power sharing is quite complicated and figuring out where you can install more EV chargers and where you can't. So that's kind of maybe the most complex part of deploying EV infrastructure. The most complex part of the actual charging of the EV is probably optimizing the battery chemistry. And in the same way that, kind of for every 1% that you make your gasoline vehicle more efficient, like we talked about earlier, I think for every 1% that you can increase the efficiency of your battery, as this market scales up, you're going to make $1 million for each 1%. Tesla's doing a ton of innovation around batteries. Panasonic's doing a ton of innovation on batteries. There's a lot of people who are really, kind of pushing this forward. But certainly if you're, just heading into university or heading into college and deciding what kind of engineering you want to focus on, certainly materials and battery engineering is going to be a big field.
I got a second question also from Zach Gold. How much time has gone into the development of your software?
Definitely thousands of hours. I think when you're building software, it's this type of problem that just expands, right? Let's talk about billing people for their EVs. So let's say we want to bill them for the kilowatt hour. But then, sometimes energy is more expensive than others. So we have to kind of change the pricing, and then it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And then in some places you can't bill by the kilowatt hour, so you have to bill by the hour. So just kind of the billing module, on our software has gone through a lot of iterations. So I think, give software engineers their due. Anytime you use an app, there's a lot more kind of coding in the background that happens.
But how much in terms of chronological order? So if you started working on it in September 2016, when was it ready to roll out on the market?
Yeah, so we got our first product into the hands of real users in about 6 months. And I think what I was about to emphasize is, like, you don't have to build your whole product from day one. Really figure out what are the key features, build those, get it in the hands of customers as soon as you can. Because we've rebuilt our whole backend 2 times now, and we've rebuilt our whole front end, twice, or we're going on to the second time. So it's so important to get feedback from users because, you don't know what people want until they start using it.
So a third question by Daniel Fernandez, what are the constraints to allocate more stations in different countries?
So the capacity of the grid is a constraint. We've talked about that one. There's CapEx. So it's not very easy to make money installing charging stations right now. Generally, we install EV chargers where there's demand of a certain stakeholder or there's some other benefits. So we talked about putting EV chargers at a grocery store, right? If you're that grocery chain, you don't need to make money on the EV chargers because you make money on people coming into your store. If you're a condo building, you don't need to make money on EV chargers because you're serving your existing community. So I think as more EVs come onto the road, there'll be more and more of a business model for people actually paying for energy. And that'll help get more chargers out. But, the grid constraint is really a big one. I think in North America, we really take the grid for granted. Many people in your audience are going to live in countries where the grid is not as stable. And so they'll understand that the idea of adding a megawatt to a certain neighborhood to power EV chargers is crazy because already they don't have enough power and you can only use hot water at certain times of the day. So I think that's a huge constraint. And luckily one that software can help solve, but there's going to need to be other infrastructure build outs too.
It's funny you mentioned that because I actually come from one of those countries. I come from Lebanon, born and raised there 18 years. And what's interesting is during summer, for half the day, we operate on municipal electricity. But for the other half of the day, we have, you know, the building has a motor, a generator, exactly. And the generator is limited to how many watts you can use. And what would happen is you can only turn on one air conditioner. And the moment you would turn on the second air conditioner, tuck, it would the electricity would cut off. So that's a reality I lived with. It was like, this was my reality. So when I came to Canada, I was like, wow, so much energy everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, it comes back to our previous conversation too about, like, you know, we want people in Lebanon to use as much energy as people in Canada do because their lives will get better. They'll get more productive. Imagine how much more productive you could be if you weren't flipping off switches so you could get the AC on or just sweating it out, right? Like, this has a real impact on quality of life and productivity. So, I mean, I think this is going to be the biggest challenge because EVs add a huge load to the grid and we need to kind of shift away from producing all our energy with petrol to making more electricity so we can power more EVs.
Awesome. So last question by Harishi. How far is cordless charging technology?
Yeah, cordless charging or wireless charging. I mean, you just go to the Apple store, you buy a Qi charger, and then you drive your car on top of it. That should work, right? So that doesn't quite work. There are, you know, the amazing thing about the world is that the future is here. It's just not evenly distributed. So there's wireless charging startups. There's a wireless bus pilot in Shanghai, I believe, where they're charging buses actually through not only wirelessly, but through the asphalt. So, you know, people are working on the technology. I think you have to figure out, you know, when is this going to be mission critical business case, right? Because I would say today it's a nice to have. I think the best shot for wireless charging to become widely adopted is autonomous vehicles. Because if autonomous vehicles can park themselves and charge wirelessly. But at the same time, there's people working on robotic charging arms or little vehicles that drive around and plug into the car. So it's hard to predict. But, you know, certainly something our software would support if it became widespread enough. You know, just the type of creative thinking we need, you know, like get out of thinking about cars as a gasoline vehicle. You know, what if we make a car with two seats? What if we make a car with, you know, 10 seats? What if we make a self-driving car? There's so many different things that we haven't done because we've been so kind of stuck in the petrol vehicle realm. You know, there's EVs in India and China now that cost less than $5,000. So, you know, for every Tesla that there is on the road, there's going to be 10 of these $5,000 EVs. And again, this is very, very tangential to wireless charging, but I think you're going to see every way to charge a car. You're going to see every way to build a car. You're going to see every permutation. We just don't know which ones will win.
Zach, listen, where can people learn more about you and ChargeLab?
Yeah. So always happy to have visitors at www.chargelab.co. .co. You know, we should be doing more posts on LinkedIn and Instagram and Twitter. So go follow Charge Lab. And once enough people follow there, you know, we'll get the proper social media team putting out interesting content. I mean, we're always looking for really bright engineers. So I think your audience has no challenge there because I've listened to a couple of your podcasts everybody says, hey, we need great engineers. Come apply to the job at our company. Just a great, testimonial that even if there's hundreds of thousands of people studying engineering around the world, we still need more engineers and every type, software, hardware, firmware, chemical, structural, we need more engineers.
Just like we need more energy. Zach, Listen, man, it was a real pleasure speaking together. I really enjoyed this. Hey, Worldwide Engineers, thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you've been enjoying the podcast so far, please, please, please share it with a friend, as growing this community is going to allow us to bring you better and better speakers where you'll be able to learn things you cannot find anywhere else on the internet. Getting a friend to also listen to this podcast is going to give you someone you can discuss the content you've learned from this podcast, which will in turn increase your retention rate of the information you are learning. Anyways, guys, thank you for listening, and don't forget to be legendary. I'll see you soon.